The following podcast is a production of Iowa PBS and Market to Market. I'm Colleen Bradford Krantz. Thank you for listening.
Welcome into the Friday, August 26, 2022 Market Plus. Ted Seifert's here. Ted, we talked a lot about Crop Tour. We're going to continue to talk about Crop Tour. However, there are other things in the market that are to be discussed, and Roger in Indiana wants to lead off our discussion this way. He says, how reduced is the Chinese corn crop, and will it cause increased U.S. exports in spite of the strong dollar?
Yeah, that's a great question, Roger. The fact of the matter is, I don't know if we'll know until after it happens, because the Chinese are not extremely forthcoming with anything. In fact, think about earlier in the year where we were talking, or we were hearing from China that it was one of the worst wheat crops in decades. And then turns out, oh, yeah, it was actually a pretty good wheat crop. Wheat is a different animal. We say we can kill it 10 times and it'll still produce. Not always the case, but yeah. So I really don't know. I think the proof there will have to be in the pudding, right? Are we going to see it on our export sales? In a situation like that, if China has a short crop, the dollar won't matter. If they need it, they will have it. That's how China works. So you're just going to have to wait to see if we're going to see those export sales. And then the question has to be, is the USDA going to be able to give us export sales numbers? Because after the debacle last week, they have to be scrambling to try to figure out how to go back to the old system or fix the new one. But at this point, we're not even sure if we're going to see last week's export sales ever or when. And we're not even sure if we're going to get export sales next week. So I don't know. That's a problem.
Does the dollar still matter talking commodities?
Of course the dollar matters.
But, I mean, the dollar is so strong right now, yep, which traditionally tells us that's bad for U.S. commodities.
When the dollar's strong, the dollar index is strong, right? You think about what it is. And who the currencies that make up that index, the euro, the yen, mostly, right? It's not who's buying, well, the Japanese do, but it's not who's buying from us. It's China, right? China is mostly pegged to the dollar, so for them, it doesn't really matter. When we talk about the strength of the dollar index, that's mostly a reflection of domestic, right? If the dollar is worth more, it has more purchasing power domestically, so that it could buy, it can buy more of something at a cheaper price, mm-hmm, right? As far as exports are concerned, yes, it has an influence on it. But again, in times of shortages, global shortages, when you have Europe burning up, you have China burning up, you have Ukraine that can't ship much, and who knows what their corn crop's going to be, it's not as much about the dollar as it's just about need.
Okay. What about this topic? Mitchell in Orange City wants to know, in Iowa, is this one of those years where the low has been put in and we're going to trend higher into harvest?
That's a really good question. It's very rare to have a harvest low in June. But it's not impossible. And it happens in years where we get surprised by something. And we just spent a whole lot of time talking about how we were surprised by the corn crop and the lack of the corn crop, I should say. A different story for soybeans, right? But I don't know. I'm really conflicted right now with my views on a smaller crop and being bullish on the supply side of things, but then also my concerns over what's going to happen fall into winter from the economy, from the macro economy, global economy. I worry about Chinese demand for corn being there. If we haven't seen it yet, I can't say for sure it will be there. So I don't know. Like I said, I think there's a tremendous amount of risk on both sides. I don't think you can take for granted that low is in. I really don't. That being said, a much shorter crop is probably going to raise the potential low higher. And ultimately, Paul, the best thing I can say is this. We have had prices at near historical highs, historically high prices, going on over 2 years now. And it doesn't work like that. We don't stay at high prices for very long because ultimately what happens? Supply comes up, i.e. Brazil planting and looking to harvest 150 million metric ton soybean crop coming soon to theaters near you. Not that soon, but soon enough. I mean, 4 to 6 months out. And then you've got high input costs. So, if the prices of things start coming down, meaning the prices of the products, right? The price of ethanol, right, if it starts coming down, the price of beef and cattle, the things that we make with these inputs, right? If they start coming down, we're going to see demand destruction. If you lose inflation, you're going to see demand destruction. So that can fix a supply problem pretty quickly.
Well, it's a little bit what you talked about during our main discussion, yeah, when you were saying the media interviews, mm-hmm, and the Wall Street Journal had a story Friday morning.
Right.
That's always that, well, once it shows up on the front page of,
yes,
this, the end is near.
Right, the end is near. The Wall Street Journal in particular is the one historically that we all look at and say, oh, no, oh, no.
It's the rally's over.
Yeah, it's done.
After the love is gone. All right, Phil in Dresden. Our friend Phil wants to know, soybean crush premiums are very healthy. Soybean future spreads into 23 are telescoping a continued bullish trend. However, there is this, as you said, mythical Brazil 23 crop. Yeah. Do farmers sell more soybeans, or do they engage in more creative risk management scenarios?
Creative risk management scenarios. That's what we talked about that during the main program, too. You know, I think because there is this tremendous amount of potential for volatility from where we stand at these already high prices, they could go higher because of a global shortage of grain. In fact, you know, there is a world that exists where, you know, inflation cools off, crude oil comes down, things like that, and we do keep grain prices high, relatively high, until that Brazilian crop comes online. But then also, you know, maybe not. You know, maybe there is a tremendous amount of downside potential too. So I think you really need to set price window strategies. I think that's the best thing you can do, right? Just put a band around it. You know, and what I mean by that is for November soybeans, you can own a $16 put, or I'm sorry, a $14 put, and sell a 16, 1640, 1660 call somewhere in that neighborhood. If you can get those done for even money, it's an even swap. And so what happens then is, you know, you have a floor defined, and the cost for you to have that floor is that it's going to give you a profit target to the upside, right? And if it doesn't hit either one of them, then that means the market stayed within that range, and you're probably sitting pretty good from a cash sale point of view. Worst case scenario to the downside, you know that put's going to, at least on the board perspective, it's going to give you your worst case scenario to the downside. The real problem with it is, one, you got to margin that call, but also it limits how much you can get to the upside. So, you know, if you're in the camp that thinks you're going to $22 soybeans, then maybe just buy a put, define your risk, and leave the upside open. I'm fine with that, too.
All sorts of strategies out there. I'm going to get to the crop in a minute. I asked you about feeders. Is there anything in cattle that we needed to discuss? I mean, we've seen the trend was higher.
Yeah.
And then towards the middle of the week, we started going lower.
Yeah, we kind of lost some steam there. Well, you know, hogs have had a big correction, too. I think cattle kind of following along with that. We saw box beef prices coming down. We were worried about packers' margins kind of shrinking a little bit, potentially putting some pressure on the cash. But ultimately, you know, at least it feels like domestic demand is still rather good. You know, we worry about what happens after the Labor Day holiday, and, you know, we tail off before we get back into the holidays. You look at feeder cattle under pressure because of the amount of strength in corn. So, you know, that's kind of the double whammy that you don't want to see. But we've been in an uptrend for quite a long time, and I don't think this is quite the end of it. I think we do find some footing at some point and try to bounce back towards those highs.
Let's finish up with Crop Tour.
Crop Tour.
Got two questions that I want to get to for sure. Justin in Wisconsin's where I want to start, Ted. Will areas not covered by the Crop Tour make up for the lack of yield found on the tour? Michigan and Wisconsin look pretty good.
Michigan and Wisconsin look pretty good. Minnesota, which obviously was covered by Crop Tour, it's just really mostly southern Minnesota. A lot of people on Twitter are talking about Minnesota being the opposite, right?
That's what I was going to say. You took the most heat yesterday about the Minnesota.
I did.
A lot of people coming back at you.
Yep. That's okay. But the crops that you see in southern Minnesota, those crops exist elsewhere, too. Wisconsin looks really good, and like you said, Michigan. But I'm going to bring this back to South Dakota, right? Because South Dakota, day one, the first night, you see a pro farmer number where you've got South Dakota corn down 27%. Well, what I don't think a lot of people realize is that the pro farmer tour only goes through about 13% of South Dakota's growing area. There's a lot of other crops grown in South Dakota that pro farmer doesn't reach. And I know Chip and company, they take that into consideration when they're doing their numbers. So I'm not arguing with their final number right now. But what I am saying is that there was really good corn that I was looking at the day before a crop tour started in northeastern South Dakota. And I know that corn is really rather good all the way over to, through Sisseton to Britain, and even over to Aberdeen. Even if it's not the best they've ever had, it's certainly a lot better than it was in those areas last year. I think the South Dakota number might surprise some people, maybe even the ProFarmer people. So, ProFarmer, it's a big tour. It's the biggest tour out there. It covers a lot of ground, but it doesn't cover everything. And yeah, I do think that maybe crops are going to offset the lower yield. Like I said earlier, I'm more around a 172. Not all the way down to 168 yet.
Final 30 seconds on what Ted wants to talk about what you've seen this week. What do you have?
I saw some really tiny baby deer that kind of surprised me as I was walking into a cornfield, and they kind of hopped along. That was pretty cool. You always see some really kind of interesting things that you don't expect to see. And it's a lot of fun. You're with a lot of people. You get to make a lot of friends. It's a very stressful week for me because I'm trying to do the media stuff too, and full jobs as a craft scout, full job as my normal job. But it's a very worthwhile thing.
And having to weigh in on which breakfast pizza might be the best.
Yeah, we got to have some fun while I'm riding around in the backseat of a truck.
I appreciate all the work that you've done. I mean, this is a good data point that ProFarmer has done.
Yep.
I know we have nothing to do with it, but it's something for us to talk about, just like a USDA report is. So thank you to everybody there that did the work there, and thank you, Ted, for making time for us. Busy week for you. You're done.
Thank you. Right. My pleasure.
That's Ted Seifert. Next week, we're going to look at the push to move data from analog to digital to discover new opportunities, and Jeff French will be here to analyze the markets. I'm Paul Yeager. Thank you so very much for watching. Have a great week.